never rest.
Good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Georgia Show here on the Dogs HQ YouTube channel. As always, we are presented by our friends at American Pride Bank. If you're looking for local solutions to your banking needs, American Pride Bank, the way to go. Get over, check them out, whether it's a small business loan, personal banking, they got you covered on all fronts. Alpharetta, Athens, online at AmericanPride.bank. You're talking to decision makers at each step along the way when you're talking to American Pride Banks. Get over, check them out, give them some love, and tell them Dogs HQ sent you. They are member FDIC and an equal opportunity lender. Jake Rowe, what do you know on your Thursday morning?
Not a whole lot, man. Just that, been a tough week for Georgia fans coming off of – it's been a tough time here lately. You know, you didn't land everybody that you wanted to. And I guess you're kind of used to getting everybody that you want to. So I kind of understand where you're coming from. But I don't know. I guess what could have been just like a banner 8 days ended up just being a really good 8 days. And I can understand where the frustration comes at and that, the whole Jackson Cantwell thing. I told you a few minutes ago, kind of tired of talking about it because there's just only so many different ways we can get to it. But it is the topic, and there's still a lot of things to unpack from it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Jackson Cantwell is still the name kind of on everybody's mind, which, look, like you said, it's been a weird 8 days because you land the nation's number one quarterback per the On3 rankings. You get him in the fold, five-star player. Typically, that would have everybody beside themselves, but the Cantwell thing goes the other way and goes the way of the Miami Hurricanes. And, you know, it was one of those things, Jake. It changed kind of day of in terms of what we were hearing. It seemed
at least the day before.
Yeah. I mean, it was 24 hours roughly, you know, a surge by Miami and some wild numbers out there being reported. I hesitate to say any numbers because I don't personally know any numbers. But our man Pete Nakos has put some numbers out and they are.
Well, impressive. I mean, we can say what Pete reported. Pete reported 2.5 million,
which is a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot of guaranteed money in the first year for a guy that hasn't played any college ball yet. I think that's fairly close. I would say probably – I don't mind talking about numbers because this is what we do now. We need to – and we can get to this.
I'm cool talking about – I'm just saying I don't have the numbers.
You're gutless. You're absolutely gutless. Yeah, we don't know them for a fact, but, right. good authority. I think, you know, we're probably looking around – in excess of 2 million. And I don't fault that kid one bit. And honestly, here's the thing. Before we really get into kind of anything else, one thing I wanted to bring up, because Ari Wasserman had a pretty good soliloquy on this. And I'm not saying sometimes when you say that people use a soliloquy, you're kind of insulting them. I'm not doing it. I thought Ari did a good job about, hey, you know, admitting that you made a really good used NIL effectively to land a top prospect should not be a scarlet letter. It shouldn't be something that you're ashamed of. Well, we got a long way to go in that regard because I'm old enough to remember like this offseason when pro athletes will tell you, oh, it's not all about the money. So
Myles Garrett wanted to go somewhere to win, didn't he?
Yeah. Right. So yeah. It's not all about the money. No, man. I mean, come on. Even they won't talk about it. Right. I mean, they will, and probably more liberally than college athletes or more willingly than college athletes will admit, hey, I chose the school for money. But even the pro athletes don't want to say I did it for the money. You know, sure. Most of them don't. And so there's something that's taboo about the whole thing as far as talking about it.
I don't understand that. I don't get it because everyone can understand why it's about the money. Everybody gets that. Everybody in the world understands to some degree it's about the money. We were talking about this on the message board, and I said, look, there's a certain number that you just don't leave on the table, in my opinion. I mean, there are gaps in these things where you say, that's too much for me to pass up. And I get it, man. I understand that. And that's why I don't fault the kid either. And I don't fault anybody for doing it for that reason. I wish there was a little more transparency and that we could, you know, look, by all measurable statistics, Stacy Searles has produced much more NFL drafted talent than Alex Mirabal. I mean, these are facts. These are not wild accusations or me being Homer. Those are things we can go look at the numbers.
Stacy Searles has had more day one and day two picks in the 2025 NFL draft than Alex Mirabal has had in his entire career. One draft,
that just is what it is.
A whole career. Georgia has had 8 offensive linemen drafted in the past 3 drafts since Stacy Searles has been at Georgia. Okay. I'm not trying to tout him as some guru or anything like that. 8 draft picks, 2 first rounders, 3 more day two picks, and 8 total. So
how many has Alex Mirabal had?
During that same time, I think 3. And I think he's had a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth.
So there you go. I mean, look, and I'm not crapping on the guy. I mean, he's a fine coach. He does a good job. He clearly gets, you know, high profile gigs. He's a friend of Mario Cristobal, and they've worked together.
And clearly Jackson Cantwell believes in him, because I think one of the things that would keep you from taking an offer, a big offer like that, is the fact that this guy's a joke. I don't like him. I don't think he's a good coach. Like, I could understand turning down that money if you don't think you're going to. Clearly the guy's good at what he does. He's coaching University of Miami. Sure. Like, nobody's trying to say he's not good, but let's not get bogged down in this whole, like, one school does a better job of developing. You even see Georgia fans, the anti-Searles people doing that. And listen, I don't think Stacy Searles did a very good job last year, okay? I've said that over and over again. Even got into a little bit of a conversation with a guy on the board yesterday when I compared what Georgia did last year to what it did in 29 under Sam Pittman. I think Sam Pittman's a better coach. I don't think there may be a handful of coaches, college football coaches, offensive line coaches, that are better than Sam Pittman in the history of the game, okay? But he had a bad year. And while I don't think as highly of Stacy Searles as to call him one of the best to ever do it, he had a bad year. And last year was a bad year. So we got that part established. And you've got some Georgia fans that say, well, he just doesn't want to play for Searles because of last year. Georgia won the SEC, man. Miami didn't even make anything. They had a number one pick at quarterback and didn't play for anything. So those, and I'm mainly talking to Georgia fans here because I know Miami fans aren't watching this thing. So I'm talking to you Georgia fans who are saying, well, it's because of it. Come on, man. I mean, Georgia had everything in the world to sell this kid. Everything in the world. And when it came down to it, what Georgia had and the advantages Georgia had were almost certainly overcome by a chance for Jackson Cantwell to set himself up for life. And when you tell me that I might be able to go to college for 3 years, play the game I love, develop, and put myself in position to make millions and millions more, while gathering millions and maybe putting myself in a spot where I don't ever have to work again, I mean, that's just kind of a no-brainer, man. And if somebody wants to go there and stomach that risk, you can't stop them, and all you can do is tip your cap.
I would straight up retire out of college. I would absolutely. I would.
That's why we don't have the opportunity to do
this. I'm saving my body. I'm going to invest this stuff, man. I'm going to go have a great life if you give me $2.5 million.
Well, I got 2 points on that. One, that's why we're doing what we're doing and not doing that, because we're not driven. I don't know if saving this body that I have is good for the world. You know, like, I think, you know, as soon as we get this piece of trash out of here, maybe this world will be a better place.
Well, but, you know, I said too, somebody on the board made the point. They said, would you pass this money up if you could make 10 times this money in 4 years? And I said, look, I'm playing a sport where people are essentially trying to hurt me.
I need odds. You got to give me some odds.
Yeah, exactly. Right. What are the odds I can hit that number? Because
if you tell me that, like, all right, I've got to kind of suffer through these 3 years with less money, and I'm guaranteed that money on the other. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll do that. But if anything less than, I don't know, at least 75, 80% chance, I'm probably not even going to entertain it.
I mean, I can get folded up on in a pile, which happens every play. Okay. A pile is going to occur. And I mean, every play, there's a chance that you're going to get hurt.
Happens to me at the buffet.
Listen, by all measurables, we think Jackson Cantwell, I think he will be an incredible player. But there's a chance he won't be also. I mean, that possibility does exist. We've seen 5-star offensive linemen go to the next level and not be able to produce. Give me the money every single time. I'm sorry. I'm not – that's – that's crazy not to take that, in my opinion. And I understand winning and wanting to compete for championships. Those things matter too. But at some point, you're going to set me up for a place in life that is going to supersede that, in my opinion.
Yeah, and ultimately, too, here there's another facet of this thing. Jackson Cantwell is a big athletic kid. A certain level, you're going to get out there at left tackle or right tackle, and you're out there on an island with a really good player, and that is incredibly tough to do. It is incredibly tough to be great at that. So you're not only insulating yourself from injury and the fact that it may not work out, you're also insulating yourself from the fact that it may not work out exactly how you want it to work out.
That's a great point also. And I mentioned the fact that, look, there are 32 people who get to make first round money. That's it. Those are slim odds as well. I mean, those are bad odds too. Does Jackson Cantwell have better odds than the average human being of doing that? Yes, 100%. Without question. However, the drop off between first round and second round is pretty significant. Will Levis was making what, $900,000 or something like that? I had $600,000. I can't remember the exact thing. But I mean, it's not like the money changes significantly. So you're not only going against the odds that you're going to get hurt, you're not only going against the odds that your career pans out, but you're also going against the odds of, am I one of the 32 best people on earth? And oh yeah, sometimes guys from North Dakota State go in the first round too. So it's not necessarily a shoe-in that because I pick a big school, because I because does not equate to that. And for that reason, like I said, I get it, man. I don't fault the kid at all. I don't.
And there's a flip side to that too, and it's Georgia's side of this thing, right? Like, it's like, all right, you get this kid, and he has that navicular fracture that Georgia's dealt with a few players, and he doesn't play his first year. Well, that's $2.5 million. Just, I mean, I'm pretty sure in at professional levels, it's collectively bargained or implemented there where they have insurance policies on guys where they kind of recover their money, where they, you know, where they recover money when guys end up getting hurt. So, you know, you're Georgia and you're like, hey, do we tie that much up into one guy? Do we need that guy at that much? And I think you learn the answer to that is no. I don't think Georgia was particularly close when it comes to the, you know, the guaranteed money part of this thing. And, you know, it brings up the question of whether or not, you know, Georgia can handle it in this era of NIL. And it sucks that we have to do this, because with so much evidence to the contrary, we've got two examples right now that seem to trump everything else. It seems to kind of take precedence over everything else. Justice Terry and Jackson Cantwell, that's reality, not the other two dozen guys that Georgia's gotten over the last few years that they've battled for on the NIL front. Like, we were having a discussion on the board, and somebody wanted to say that Ellis Robinson didn't fit into the same category as Jackson Cantwell or Justice Terry. And I really wanted to rip my scalp clean. Okay, like I wanted to look like Josh Pate, but with my own hands as the culprit. Okay, no razors, no nothing. Because guys, Ellis Robinson, I mean, it's an apples to apples comparison. I mean, it's not just apple to apples, it's Honeycrisp to Honeycrisp apple comparison, because it was Miami was the team involved with Ellis Robinson, and they won. Alabama did too. And he was their big-time target, and they tried and tried and tried. And I'm 99% sure they worked hard to get him in the portal. So, you know, we're talking about some really impressive prospects, starting with a guy like Ellis Robinson. Monroe Freeling is another. Like, Georgia's won these battles. Jared Curtis is another one. It's weird how, to me, when folks want to have this discussion, somebody is an NIL heavy hitter, somebody is the boogeyman as far as NIL goes, until Georgia beats them, and then they push him to the side, and then the next team that comes in that beats Georgia for a guy because of money is the NIL superstar all of a sudden.
I could not agree with you more. When the argument came up that, well, I don't mean Monroe Freeling, I'm like, well, what do you want? I mean, he's the number one overall tackle in the class. That is what you're asking for, and you won the battle. I don't know what else you can want. I pulled this graphic up, Jake. It's the On3 industry ranking 5 stars. And I am curious, to you, because something immediately caught my eye about the guys that are committed on this list. And Xavier Griffin, by the way, has since decommitted from Southern Cal. What is there anything that stands out to you? Because I'll tell you exactly what stands out to me about this list.
The number of different teams on there, maybe. I don't know.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is to me, is how the number of different teams that you're seeing there. You're seeing two teams that have multiple industry five-star. I'm sorry, three teams with multiple industry five-stars. That's Oregon, Ohio State, and LSU. They are the ones that have those have their name next to two guys. Otherwise, you've got
Miami. You got USC. Well, actually, you're right. USC is not there anymore because they're
definitely committed. Yeah. Okay. So you've got Miami on there. Georgia's got one. Maryland's got one. Texas has one. Tennessee has one. Notre Dame has one. Houston has one. Alabama has one. USC now has one. Washington has one. To me, that speaks to the way that this stuff is kind of being dispersed. Now, I'm not saying this is what the list will ultimately look like in the end. Some of these guys obviously will probably end up, Tyler Atkinson will probably be Georgia or Ohio State, right? You know, you'll probably get Alabama in there for a couple more guys. Oregon may get Emmanuel Iheanacho.
Yeah, Mark Bowman's going to be Georgia or Texas probably.
Right, exactly. So, but as it stands right now, the resources are pretty well spread out. That was what kind of caught my eye about that. And I think that is, if we're saying is NIL Georgia's kryptonite, I don't think so, man. I think that it is one of those things.
No more so than it is for anybody else.
That's exactly my point. Yes. Now, would you expect it to be Oregon and Ohio State? Yes, we know that they are heavy hitters in the NIL space. LSU, I think that we can both call that what it is. Brian Kelly's coaching for his job right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they're stroking checks to try and keep him around right now.
Exactly, yes. So, I mean, there's a number of ways to look at that. I don't, like you said, I don't think it's any more Georgia's problem than it is anybody else's. There are probably teams that may be a little bit better equipped for it, you know, like a Texas, like an Ohio State.
But my problem with it is like today – like everybody likes to put a stake in the ground today and talk about like what's here and now is different than what we've been dealing with for the past 6 months, a year and a half, 2 years. And it's just not like the most recent signing class that we saw. You could talk about all the heavy NIL hitters you want to. Georgia didn't overcome one of them. It was Texas. Texas ended up having the better class, you know, I think across the board and cool. That's awesome. Texas, it came down to Justice Terry. They made it happen with that class, but Georgia beat out Ohio State. They beat out Oregon. They beat out Alabama. They beat out all of these other schools, you know, in terms of these recruiting rankings. So I just have a hard time, you know, sitting there saying that Georgia's playing left-handed or that Georgia's at a disadvantage or that they can't hang or all of this stuff. I mean, I guess, like I told somebody yesterday, when Georgia doesn't sign an elite class, when they don't sign a top three, top four class, maybe we can start trying to be worried about it all of a sudden. But you know they're doing what they're doing at a very high level, and I don't think they're going to lose some battles. It's going to cause some heartache, and it's definitely going to cause some emotional reactions. And listen, don't stop with emotional reactions. We're not trying to say that. Be emotional. It's college football. Love that stuff. But it's not like Georgia's out here getting his lunch money taken left and right. You know, we're talking dozens of examples of battles won and a couple lost, That's how recruiting works. I mean, listen, nothing that has happened to Georgia is more egregious than what happened to Georgia 12 years ago when Laramie Tunsil happened. I mean, we all knew the story there. Every single person on the planet knew the story. Hugh Freeze even knew the story because he sent out a tweet and basically confirmed it with his, doth protest too much. But I mean, this has been going on for a long time, and it's not going to stop going on.
And I think I'm of the mind that Georgia will have a top 3 to 5 class this year once again. And they'll compete for the number one class. There's a shot at it for sure. And that's probably the case in 2027, which is another loaded cycle in the state. I mean, I'm in firm agreement with you. Until you start seeing yourself get lapped, it's hard for me to go down that road. And I understand offensive line is a major position in need, but so is quarterback. And so is defensive line. And they landed the nation's number one defensive lineman last year.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, these things, you can parse it out how you want to make it fit.
Only that, the number one edge.
Yeah.
They landed the number one edge in the country as well. You know, and that was a high end. That was a big time NIL battle, I'm sure, you know, behind the scenes. The prior class, another premium position, cornerback.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you're talking about Ellis Robinson. It's just, yeah. I mean, they're winning a lot of battles that just seem to get erased and not talked about.
And the numbers support it.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, at the end of the day, like, that's what makes it inarguable to me. The numbers support it is – That's the place I'm moving from. So I don't think it's to answer the question posed in the banner below. I do not think NIL is Georgia's kryptonite, or it has not proven to be to this point anymore.
And maybe it does. Maybe Kirby just gets tired of it. It's like, listen, I'm not paying these guys, you know, what they want to pay to come in here. We're just not going to do it. And maybe the program falls apart because of that. I don't know. I can't predict the future. I'm just going step by step and kind of showing you the way. NIL is not brand new. Okay, we didn't just start this yesterday. This has been around for a few years, and walking you step by step and showing you what Georgia's willing to do and how they're doing it. To me, I see them getting stuff done and signing big time players and staying highly competitive.
And you mentioned too, let's say that, God forbid, a kid comes in, gets hurt, right? Making $2.5 million. Well, I'll tell you what, if I'm your left tackle and I'm out there, and I better be getting $2.5 million. Because I'm out there doing it. I'm putting my body on the line, and I'm making it happen, and I'm blocking for your quarterback, and I'm opening holes for the run game. And the guy behind me sitting on the bench is making $2.5 million. The harmony within the locker room, or the disharmony, perhaps is the better way to approach it, that this can create, is significant. And I don't know that we've seen all the ramifications from this yet.
Right, totally. All right, Roos, give us some Sun Heist.
Hey, look, if you're looking for a way to protect your eyes and look cool and save some money, get over to sunheist.com, man. They got you covered on all three fronts. A great product at a great price. That's what Sunheist offers. Great warranty on their frames, polarization injected into lenses, so no worries about delamination on those. They're coming out with new styles all the time, so make sure to get over there, check out the new stuff from time to time. Code DAWGSHQ20, DAWGSHQ20, gets you 20% off your first purchase at Sun Heist. Great for hiking, great for tailgating, great for relaxing on the lake this summer. Hell, throw them on when you're out there tanning in your backyard or running the grill, man. Sun Heist, great product, and we've said it here a million times. I'd wear Sun Heist even if they did not sponsor our show, but they do, and we're lucky to have them. We appreciate them being here. So, great, great people, Mary and
Shane.
Shane, yeah, that blanked on the name. Mary and Shane, go over there, check them out. Some great ones. I like those elms; those are sharp. Dogs HQ 20, the code, 20% off and free shipping. They get them shipped super quick too. That blew my mind when I put the order in, how fast they came to the door. Sunheist.com, lots of customization to be done there.
Absolutely,
good prints.
So Kirby spoke on NIL yesterday and on the Paul Feinbaum show. And, you know, I got to say, man, I was kind of impressed with his wording around this. And I don't normally get very impressed with what Kirby has to say, simply because he's says just a lot of word salad and doesn't really say a whole lot. Paul Feinbaum seemed to kind of try to get him in the corner a little bit after asking him a question on the president's comments on the fatigue and state of the game and all that stuff and kind of the commission. And he talked about dealing with young players and how it's different with NIL. And Kirby kind of got a little bit emphatic, said, that's not the problem, Paul. It's not the fact that they're making money. It's not that. It's not an issue. The issue is the inability to pinpoint what the rules are and what we can do. Nobody's upset about it. We're all very thankful. SEC players are the most marketable players. They get the most coverage. They get seen on TV. I'm so comfortable with that. We're past that point. We just want to know the parameters with which we are playing by and be able to sustain a budget and have other sports survive. I think every coach would take that at this point. There's no old school, young school. There's none of that. We're comfortable paying the players. And, you know, it's – I think that was a reality that that coaches had to come to, you know, at some point. Like, I think they were worried about having to pay the players and the different challenges it would bring them. But now I think everybody has kind of settled down on, all right, these guys deserve to be paid. They deserve to be paid really well. They help generate a highly coveted money-making product. So give them some money. They deserve that. But there are a bunch of other factors we're talking about here, which is, you know, in the NFL, they've got there's a rookie wage scale. You know, like in NBA, there's a rookie wage scale. You know, baseball is a little bit different. It's a little bit more of a free-for-all, but you know, teams only have so much you can spend because you're not making as much money as college football is on the whole. So, you know, rules are not a bad thing, and we got to come up with a way to have some. And I don't think we need to be getting into the weeds of in the mechanics of how you get to that point. But I thought that Kirby's comments on NIL and kind of putting them out there, you know, again, kind of refreshing there that you get kind of a line in the sand that, hey, we need rules, but it's not like we're saying this thing's out of hand, even though we kind of do know it is out of hand.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think you have to appreciate that thought process that he's moving from. And like you said, quite frankly, it probably has taken some of the anxiety off of them to have it done. You know, to know it was coming and coming and coming for so long. It was the boogeyman that was always going to be lingering in the closet. Well, now it's all out in the open and it's happening. And so they're navigating the waters. Like you said, not to get too much into the mechanics, but I agree there needs to be some sort of scale on this. And the only way for that to happen, I think, Jake, though, is for the players to unionize because they have to be able to collectively bargain. You can't tell somebody this is how we're going to limit how much money you can make, and this is only how much money you can make if they don't get a say in that. At least that's my understanding of how most employment works. You know, you can. I'm unaware of any state or the inability to move from state to state and not do that. And what you're going to run into, I think, is not the collective bargaining aspect of it, but you saw this, like the thing with Louisiana came out with that temporary hold against the executive order against the NIL regulation. You know, Georgia's done its own things. There's usurp to usurp constantly for this thing being pushed.
Everybody, I cannot wrap my head around, man, I want to play by a different set of rules and I'm going to be proud to win a championship. Like,
yeah.
That sucks, man. That is so lame. That is the lamest stuff ever. Like, hey, we're going to go play a basketball tournament, right? We're going to play a 2-on-2 basketball tournament up at the gym. And but my team gets 3. And when we win, we're going to brag. Yeah. You know? Like, golly, are you kidding me?
I get Gary Payton.
It makes me mad. I want to fight somebody.
Yeah. I get Gary Payton on my team and you get you.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what are we doing here? I agree with you completely. And it's going to take, probably at the end of the day, the university presidents are going to have to be the ones, because I think a lot of this is being guided by the football coaches. And I can understand why, because they're the ones making the most money. But the university presidents are going to have to come in and say, hey, look, we're going to have to form a truce. And probably where this is ultimately going to happen, Jake, where I see it playing out is the long-awaited next boogeyman, which is the Super Conference. I think that we're going to have to admit at some point that there are teams playing by a different set of rules than every other team out there. There are probably about 50 to 60 teams that can actually sustain this world and can be profitable with it. And I think that they're going to have to do their own thing. That's just my take on it. I don't see any other way, because to pretend that App State and Georgia are doing the same thing right now, it is 3-on-2 basketball.
Yeah, totally. And that, and again, if when you're trying to get around the laws to just even compete with your peers in a completely different way, that sucks. I don't know, man.
Vanderbilt probably aren't really playing the same game.
Yeah, right. But there's not legislation in place. There's not rules right in place that prevent Vanderbilt from being able to do that. Vanderbilt just can't. You know, like it.
Right.
it just it's just not going to be able to, right? There's nothing that is a part of state law that gives anybody else an advantage over Vanderbilt specifically. My thing is like the one and two teams that are trying to rise above everybody else, right? By, hey, we're going to be able to pay them more, so we're going to get more, and if we win, we're still going to be. I mean, nah, come on now. That's just not what this is all about. You know, everybody stand on the same floor, and that's why we have collectives, is because one team decided, all right, we're going to do it this way. And everybody else is like, all right, we got to get on their level because they're going to have a big time advantage if we don't.
And I said, and you have agreed with me on this, or maybe you said it first. I don't know, but I'm on board with it either way. Coaches hold a big bag of responsibility.
Big time.
Do not let them pretend that they are the innocent parties. Just behold, oh, woe is us. It's all happened. And we've just got to deal with it now that it's here. You brought this on yourself.
Yeah, totally. I mean, for years and years and years, these coaches kicked the can down the road and said, I just want to coach my football team. Okay, well, then, you know, you'll have some of the defenders of the coaches pop in and say, they get paid to win games, not to, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, all right, well, all that grandstanding about the health of the game and the future of the game and all this stuff that you talk about and all this stuff that you say because it makes you look good, then they shouldn't have said all that stuff. Okay, they're paid. To win games, yeah, but to be ambassadors to the sport. It's the health of a sport that has made a ton of money as time has gone on. As revenue has gone up, coaches' salaries have also gone up. So, you know, you were totally fine riding that wave as long as it kept your responsibilities the same and your salary went up. Now your responsibilities have grown and you want to kind of piss and moan about it. But let me tell you something. You kicked the can down the road when you had boots on the ground and you knew what was going on more than anybody else. You knew what these players were all about. You knew the struggles they were going through financially and all that stuff, and you did nothing to get out in front. You did nothing to kind of be proactive with this whole thing, and then now you're wanting to say how hard it is. And I'm not saying that to come at Kirby or anything like that, but you made a big-time miscalculation there.
And now they're just doing what you said, which is everybody's just trying to figure out a way essentially to play a different game. Yeah. That's, you know, you're seeing that in all of this legislation that's coming down at the state level to say, look, you know, and that's the cat and mouse now has not become how can we pay the players? It's become how can I pay these players more than somebody else?
And nobody, no schools, no presidents, no athletic directors, nobody had the foresight to realize, hey, if we open this collective situation, this is going to be a fire we can't contain. Nobody. I don't know. I felt like I saw it coming from a mile away.
I knew what was going to happen.
I could have sworn like, oh my God, they're figuring out a way to basically salary players under the shadow of umbrella of NIL. No, man, that's not going to work out. That is not, because there's no way to regulate that. There's no way to, you know, to do all that. And it's just, That's why when I talk about it, I talk about collective and I talk about legit NIL. And legit NIL is you go hire yourself an agent and you play your tail off and you keep your nose clean off the field and you become marketable and you go make as much money as you can get. That's not what this is about. And you've got these collectives created to induce players to come to your school so that you can possibly pay them as much or more than another school. That's where this thing's become a little bit of a mess. It's a big mess. And ultimately, here's the thing. I don't care how much these guys make. I don't care. I don't care how much they make. I'm not trying to regulate how much they can make. I'm not upset that Georgia missed out on Jackson Cantwell and Justice Terry because somebody came in with a big offer. I don't even care about it being regulated. What I care about is the transfer portal and not being able to buy players from other teams and not being able for guys not to be able to play for two different teams within 3 or 4 months. I think they need to figure out a way to kind of keep these guys on campus for 2 or 3 years. Or you go back to the old rules and you have to sit out. Like if you sign a contract to join a team, you're on campus for 30 months. And if you leave before then, and it's not very clearly outlined exception situation, then you have to stay or you have to sit out a year if you leave. Matters way more to me than how much these guys are making.
My take on this has always been everybody gets one freebie. You can use it how you want. You get one freebie to transfer. You know, outside of that, You can use it for a hardship. You can use it because you can make some more money somewhere else. That's fine. But when we're getting into two and three and four schools, yeah, forget that.
The thing I hate about the freebie is, though, is what you just said, is you use your freebie or you end up having to use your freebie for a hardship, and then you want to leave there. And then it's, well, I use my, you know, dog, you know, whatever, you know. And then we're back in the gray area. You know, like it's got to cut some of this out. I mean, that stuff's not in place at a level where guys get paid a lot of money. You look at the NFL and the NBA and all that stuff. Like, I know people don't want it to become another pro sports league necessarily, but part of being pro makes pro sports what it is guys can be on teams for us for amount of time. They're not just going to leave you because they want to. We actually hate that when the NBA does it, when a guy just says he wants to demand a trade, like I'm not going to play. I'm going to get out of here. And that sucks. You know, holdouts in the NFL suck.
Well, and I was thinking about that because we're going to probably soon, unless something is put into place, we're probably going to have to see a school. We've seen a student athlete sue a school. We're probably going to have to see a school sue a student athlete.
We're going to probably already happened.
I would imagine it has, but I think
go public. Who is it? Arkansas is trying to get trying to recoup its cash from younger Iamaliava. So yep. Adney Iamaliava. So yeah, that's something else to keep an eye on. Also on the newcomer front here, Kirby had a chance to speak about Elo Madozi for the first time. Very boilerplate type stuff. Good kid, good family, you know, all that stuff. I thought his comments on Josh McCray were interesting. He kind of harped on short yardage there, which, you know, he talked about, you know, the SEC and college football kind of being a third and fourth and one game now. Everybody's going forward analytics, all that stuff. Bringing in a big back like that, you know, gives Georgia kind of another option. And we all know, you know, Georgia lost Branson Robinson, who was a pretty decent short yardage back when he was healthy. And now they bring in Josh McCray, who's had his own health issues. And he and Roderick Robinson and those other guys will battle it out for carries when it comes to that. Real quick, Roos, before we're kind of running long here. Recruiting. Scavenger hunt weekend. Sorry, I wanted to talk about Memorial Day weekend for some reason, and that's the one weekend where nothing is going on.
Right.
Starting this weekend, Georgia's got scavenger hunt. Don't think there's a whole lot going on Memorial Day weekend, but after that, it's going to be, I think, four straight weeks of official visits. Man, we're in a time where this next month and a half is going to be kind of packed.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of those, Jake, that as we've said it 100 times on this show, this is typically what has set the tone for how your class actually looks. These next 6 weeks, the scavenger hunt, and then the four official visit weeks, the names that have attended those events typically are the ones that end up in your class by and large. Now, there will also be camps that are going on, and that will result in new offers, which has proven to be quite interesting for Georgia. There have been guys that they've turned the heat up on. Chase Linton was a guy, remember from last year. Dennis Uzuchukwu was another guy that they spotted during the camp season last year. So a lot of new names set to emerge as well. But, you know, the majority of your heavy hitters are going to be kind of sussed out over the next 5 to 6 weeks. And then, you know, that late July, early August window has sort of proven to be the window of time where you see the majority of your class come together prior to senior season, prior to the football season kicking off. And then they've started to some degree to move into the next cycle by the time that, let's say, October rolls around, September and October. So it's a big couple of weeks. The scavenger hunt has proven to be successful. I believe what Marcus Harrison year before last committed on scavenger hunt weekend, and I think they got anybody last year on scavenger hunt weekend, but several of the people who attended obviously ended up in the class. Ethan Barbour is a guy who comes to mind, and I'm sure there were several others that attended. But it was, this has proven to be, like I said before, it felt like a hokey thing to do. It's kind of turned out to be pretty fun and pretty productive for Georgia. And at the end of the day, man, you know, it's about to get really, really busy on the recruiting front. And I know people want to be upset, but the majority of these guys, when they commit, do end up sticking that by and large. And so the majority of these guys, when they find a home, end up making that their collegiate home at the next level. And there are some high profile flips and decommits always, but This is a big time for shaping the face of this class.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it really comes down to the official visit. So I don't, you know, off the top of my head, you come over to Dogs HQ, you can see the kind of the list that Rusty put together there yesterday. I don't necessarily see anybody that I see go ahead and committing before they leave town. You know, that's often the case when guys actually do that. So it's not necessarily, I'm saying they're not going to get anybody. But these next 4 weeks, you know, we've seen in the past where official visit weekend comes that following week, a commitment or two, then the next week comes commitment or two, next week comes class starts growing. Then you get into July, guys get through with those officials. They set July to commit and they do that. You know, feels like the last two cycles we've seen double digit commits between what the weekend we're about to see now and August the 1st. And so, you know, that's where we're headed. And, you know, it's going to be a pretty wild time for these next few weeks, for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, shapes the class in a big, big way. Guys, look, we got you covered on all things scavenger hunt this weekend. Get over to Dogs HQ. We'll have news and notes to follow. Plenty from Rusty, Jeremy, myself, Jake Rowe, taking care of you on the front of the team as well. So if it's happening in red and black, it's covered at Dogs HQ. Get over and check us out. Come hang with us on Dog Walk Message Board. We'll be back with another edition of the Georgia Show, I guess on Sunday. We got nothing too crazy on Sunday. So, yeah, Sunday, Georgia Show again. Be back for it. We'll see you soon.